I recently became homeless about 10 years ago.
So when I lost my job, I lost the roof over my head. That's been a couple months ago.
So for me, man, like, this has been a struggle for me.
I'm a brick mason by trade. That's what brought me here to Charlotte.
You know, you have no purpose, you have no identity.
I'm a certified building maintenance service tech. Electrical, plumbing, carpentry, all that. I'm certified in that.
I've been homeless for the last past 7.5 years.
I don't want my family to see this. They know I'm homeless, they don't know what that entails.
I don't wish this on anybody.
I want to be off the streets.
I'll do anything, man, to get off the streets.
Hey, thanks for coming back and joining me for this episode of You May Have Seen. Hopes and dreams are running themes in today's episode. Whether it be the hopes of the numerous people who volunteer their time working with one of the many nonprofits in the area to help support and find solutions for the homeless, or the dreams of those people that are homeless and are anxiously awaiting the day when they wake up with a roof over their heads wondering if it was all just a dream. How long is too long to be homeless? I talked to a man about the journey he's been on for 7.5 years. My main guest today is Shanique Carmichael. Shanique is founder and president of Leah's Hopes and Dreams. So you see where this is going? A nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide the homeless community with vital resources, enabling them to not only survive, but thrive. We'll hear all about what she and the folks at LHD are doing, as well as how Shanique got to where she is today. It's a good one. So let's go.
And I know that I'm, you know, preaching to the choir here. I don't care who you are or what you do. We need each other.
Right.
No matter what, yeah. You know, we can't go this alone.
Right.
I hate knowing that there are people out there in the world who are hurting, who don't have enough. Because, I mean, I don't know any kid when they're growing up who says, I want to be homeless when I grow up.
Right.
You know?
Right.
But oftentimes people need help. And I know that there are so many groups, nonprofits, churches, organizations who work tirelessly in many cases to help our homeless friends and neighbors. So that's why today I've got my good friend Shanique Carmichael. Hi, Shanique.
Hello, Brian.
Dr. Shanique
Carmichael.
Oh, that's
okay. Don't go there.
I don't know why.
No.
I enjoy saying that.
Do you?
I do.
I hate it.
Really?
I do not like, that's why I don't say anything. Unless you have my card, you will not know that I have a PhD. You know, that's something I don't broadcast. I did that for myself.
Right.
To prove something to myself, but also for my daughter and my son to see that if you strive for something,
you can
achieve it.
Yes.
It was challenging, but considering my background and where I came from, this is like never possible. You know, I have it, yes, and it's great, but I don't flaunt it. You know, it's just a title.
Well, of course not. But I don't know. It's a good title because to me, it's a title that shows that you worked hard and you put in the time and
you made
the effort. So.
But a title doesn't make you right because on the streets, we're talking about homeless folks.
Yes.
You have doctors on the streets. There are. There are two individuals that I know that we've been servicing. Well, they're currently not on the streets, but they've been on the streets for a while. And life circumstances just took control over what happened. And, you know, one of them went to prison for a while and can't get a job. So what do you do? One of them didn't have family in the area.
Yep.
And as a result of that, just fell on hard times and was on the streets with a PhD.
See, and I want to try and get into as much of this as possible. But of course, I want to let everybody know a little bit more about who you are. So, Shanique, tell us who you are and talk to me about your organization.
Yes. So I grew up in the Bahamas on a small island called Exuma. Most people don't really. Bahamas has 700 islands and keys, and Exuma is one of them. When you talk about the Bahamas with them, you talk about Nassau or Freeport.
But
Exuma is a very beautiful, exclusive, small island. Mm-hmm. When I was growing up, I was raised there. We had like the population was like 900 people.
Really?
Yeah. And right now we have about 2,000 plus. It's still not a huge island.
Sure.
But I grew up very, very poor. Okay. On the island. My mom had 8 children, and she worked as a cleaning lady and made $90 a week.
Wow.
To support 8 children. I grew up in a small house. Really, it's like a hut. I don't know if you've ever been to Africa before, but this, or you've seen them, but I grew up in this small little home, concrete floors, boarded windows.
Wow.
No electricity, no running water. Okay. We use public running water. So scarcity was not a new term for me.
Okay.
You know, so what we do on the streets, I'll talk a little bit about how I'm able to bridge that gap. But growing up in the Bahamas was very challenging. Yeah, my mom, she had to borrow dry food like rice, flour, sugar, and grits if we wanted something to eat most days.
Really?
Most days I went to bed without food on my stomach.
Yeah.
Most days I woke up, went to school without breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
And so hungry during the day. I remember my dad, he worked and he had money, but he was an absent father.
Okay.
And he literally, on days that we were able to see him, he would probably give my sister, well, not probably, he gave my sister $1 for she and I to share. And can you imagine, I'm not old, but can you imagine sharing $1 during the day? 50 cents probably will get a 25 cents was for a blow pop or candy and some gum. But yet you have that. And that's what I had for lunch, if that, most days. And so I found myself, I graduated high school at 16, Ellen Coakley High School in Exuma. And for most of those years, I went to school with no shoes on my feet. Or when I did have shoes, it was borrowed from a friend of mine. And I would borrow sneakers and or shoes, or they would just give me something that they've already worn and it was worn down. If it was too small for me, I still had to force my feet into it just to have some type of shoes to go to school on. I used track and field as an avenue, as an opportunity to leave the island. So I really focused a lot on sports. I was fortunate to get a track and field scholarship, an academic scholarship to come to the U.S. to do track and school for St. Augustine's College in Raleigh. Never thought I would go to school. That's why I was saying the PhD doesn't matter, right? Because I never thought I would even get a bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
But God blessed me with the opportunity to come here to school. My mom, my second year in college, my sophomore year, my first semester sophomore year, my mom passed away.
Okay.
And she was still in poverty.
Mm-hmm.
She was still, I was working 2-3 jobs with a full-time track and field scholarship, sending money back home to help her with her rent and even get food, right? She was still struggling. When she passed away, life changed for me. I had no one here to rely on. No family here, but I stuck it out. You know, I still had 2 years to go in school, and I knew she would have wanted me to finish school because none of my siblings went to school.
Mm-hmm.
I have a huge family,
right.
And school wasn't a priority to most of them.
Okay.
And now that this generation is coming up, we have like one or two individuals that focused on school, but still cousins, sisters, brothers, none of them are really, school was not a priority, but I really focused on school because I realized that it's the foundation.
Right.
You know, the more educated you are, the better decisions you make, and then you impact lives.
Right.
And so when I graduated college, I met my husband. I met my husband because we were working together. And then we just started serving.
Mm-hmm.
So we got married a year after I graduated. But it was just so, it was God sent. It was meant to be the way it was because there were so many people hurting that we saw the opportunity and it just worked out in the way it just flowed the way it was supposed to. So we've been doing this. We've been doing this in Charlotte since 2012. I was in Raleigh for most of my years here in the U.S. So we served in Raleigh a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his mom and dad's pastor and first lady of a church there. So serving isn't new to him. But I literally flowed right into it when we came here, and that's how we birthed Leah's Hopes and Dreams, started the organization in honor of my mom. One, because she died in poverty. I see the need on the streets, and then I was able to experience it firsthand. Only thing I did not experience was not having a roof over my head. But laying on concrete floors, not having electricity, not having running water, not having shoes or the necessary things that we give out today is really what pushed us to start this organization and make the impacts we are making now.
Right.
Because I know what it feels like to go without.
Right.
When you can't get it, it's heartbreaking, but you just have no confidence and you have this sense of, I don't belong, you know? Mm-hmm. No, you don't have a sense of belonging. But at the end of the day, we're going to make sure that these individuals on the streets understand the impacts we want to make and why we're making it. It's not because we're getting anything from it. We want you to have a better life because we understand what it is to go without.
So talk to me about Leah's hopes and dreams, you know, or inform the people listening what the mission is, what Leah's hopes and dreams is all about.
Yes.
You know, yeah, talk to me about LHD.
Oh, yeah. So it's... As a result of what I just shared, my background, Leah's Hopes and Dreams is a nonprofit organization that focuses really on homeless and underprivileged families, because we don't just serve those on the streets. We serve families that have homes that are unable to pay bills, or mm-hmm. they don't have food, or they might need some recommendations for healthcare, whatever the case may be. So we focus on our three pillars are hunger, education, and housing. Mm-hmm. Of course, you know, housing is a major issue here in Charlotte.
Right.
And so we have been, this pandemic, honestly, we're in 2021.
We are.
Since 2020.
Still in 2021.
I know. Since 2020, we have been serving more in this pandemic than we've ever served. We literally started a shower truck this mm-hmm. year where we offer showers to individuals. So every Wednesday and Saturdays, we go out on the streets of Charlotte to provide individuals with the necessary things that they need to survive.
Mm-hmm.
And that's toiletries, clothing, blankets, and depending on the season, mm-hmm. Hats, gloves, food. We provide now showers.
Yes.
We have haircuts. So we're partnering with a barber who mm-hmm. comes out and he offers haircuts. I mean, come on, these individuals, they can't, first
right.
of all, they don't have the funds to pay for haircuts.
Right.
And now we stepped it up today. We are offering medical services
to these individuals.
Individuals. Yay!
That's incredible.
I'm excited. So we opened our second transitional facility.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm sorry, our first transitional facility. We do have another home in Concord that's servicing veterans.
Oh, okay.
A family of yep. 8 veterans. And so our first transitional home houses 12 guys mm-hmm. off the streets. And thank you for building our dining room table that I am so, I want to take for myself.
Well,
I might sneak it out there if I can one day.
Well, of course, you are so welcome.
Thank you.
It
was
my pleasure to make
gorgeous.
Thank you.
Gorgeous, gorgeous, gorgeous. I mean, literally, it looks like something that's in a magazine. It is that beautiful, seriously. So it enhances the room at the transitional home. But so again, we have a transitional home that we have mm-hmm. to service individuals off of the streets. And so we met the nurse that we currently have now
mm-hmm.
that's going to be out on the streets with us weekly. He came as a service to the guys that are in the streets,
okay.
That are in the home. And so it's been a really good partnership with him. He just comes in and take blood pressure and check your cholesterol. And then he really just says, hey, I think you need to go to the hospital. But he doesn't give like medical mm-hmm. advice on what you need to do, X, Y. He just said, you know, your pressure is this, which is good. Or you might need to take a look at it. He just shares with them, you probably need to take a look at it. It's been a great partnership. But we're able to do that, offer housing. It's mm-hmm. a major thing that we're currently working on
yeah.
and we'll continue to work on. It's going to be a year-over-year change and year-over-year opportunity to build what we need in order to be successful or to meet our goals.
Right. Talk to me about these homeless people. Who are these homeless people in our community?
Yeah.
You touched on it a little bit, you know, when you said there are a couple of doctors that you know.
Yeah, yeah. So you have a variety yep. of people. So
mm-hmm.
you have mental illness seems mm-hmm. to be like the thing that is just overpowering on the streets, right?
Right?
Mental illness is a real challenge. So most of the individuals, the majority of the individuals on the streets have mental challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Mental illness, addicts. You have addicts on the streets.
Right.
You have chronic illness, health mm-hmm. individuals with chronic illness, health issues.
Right.
You just have a variety of people with different issues that are on the streets. The people that we serve, you know, some of them, the stories that we would hear from mm-hmm. them as we talk to them, like today, one of the guys, he got locked up. He said, you know, it's so hard on this street. I was locked up for a week and I just appreciated being in prison for a week because it's so hard to just sleep on the concrete or oh. it's so challenging to sleep on a bench on a park. He said, at least I had a bed in prison. That's
wow.
the type of life And that's the type of mentality that these individuals on the streets have now. It's better for them to be in prison than to be on the streets.
Oh my God.
This is real. This is someone that we offer showers to every Wednesday, every Saturday. Because I said, hey, XYZ, I haven't seen you in a while. Where have you been? You've been gone for a week. It's not me, you're the first person in the shower. He said, yeah, I had a warrant out for my arrest for something a while back, and they saw me, but I intentionally wrestled the police so they can lock me up I could sleep in a bed. Yeah.
You purposely got arrested?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's that type of mental issues that is happening out there. To your question, who are these homeless people? They come in from different cities.
Mm-hmm.
They're bussed in sometimes.
Really?
And just, they're bussed in, and this is from them. You know, yes. They came in to bus, and they were dropped off in the middle of the city. They just start walking. So there was a specific lady. I get so excited, so calm me down as I'm talking so I can have complete sentences, because I start going all over the place. So this lady, she was bussed in from Baltimore, and she was dropped off in the middle of the city, and she said, I'm city hopping right now because I'm homeless. And she said, there's a free bus that goes around and take them, but they're gravitating towards Charlotte because Charlotte apparently treat their homeless individuals much better than other cities.
Right.
So they allow us to go in the streets. Apparently some cities won't allow that.
Okay.
Like for you to feed them and where organizations provide clothing and toiletries, some cities won't allow that. Because first of all, they don't want to acknowledge that they have a homeless population or issue.
Right.
And so you have cities now, individuals coming into Charlotte because they heard that Charlotte is, if you're homeless, this is the place to be.
Mm-hmm.
Because at least you'll get some type of service from some organizations. And grassroots organizations are literally on the streets doing more for these individuals than you know, some larger organizations who are getting the funding.
Right.
You know, and this is literally from the individuals on the streets. They thank us all the time, but we're not getting huge fundings from our organizations. You know, we try to submit grant funding so we can continue building the housing community we want to, but most of them, you know, so many organizations are fighting and trying to get funding to do what they want to do. But if you're not hands and feet on the streets, I don't really know how much of an impact you're having. You might be, right? But it's challenging to even know. But I don't care about what they do. I just focus on what we do.
Right.
But you have homeless individuals from all over, all kind, men, women, children, black, white, Hispanic.
Sure.
Nationality. Every nationality. Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
Have you been able to track the impact that Leah's Hopes and Dreams has made since you started the organization?
Yes. Yeah. We've served about 32,000 meals since we've started. This is on the streets, provide so far 37 certifications, red belt, green belt. So we do process improvement training. And so this is huge for us because what this does is allow individuals to gain a skill that's transferable.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the financial industry, you have financial institutions, they focus on process improvement, Lean Six Sigma. That's basically what I'm talking about.
Okay.
So I'm a green belt. I'm not going for a black belt, but the individual who is training the people who are interested in certification, she's black belt.
Okay.
So we get to train on Lean Six Sigma. We just finished our financial literacy class with Dave Ramsey, where we were able to teach 50 people on Zoom how to manage money, right?
Sure.
I don't know if people have seen it, but Dave Ramsey is amazing on how to it's called Financial Peace University class.
Okay.
It's amazing.
Wow.
And it just tells you the basics about training. I found that about savings. I find that the individuals on the streets, they live for today. They don't save. And you know, they get funding from somewhere, you know, whether that's retirement or the state is assisting in some way.
Mm-hmm.
But once they get the funding, they just go and they use for drugs, they use it for alcohol, they use it to sleep in a hotel, or they use it for women. The guys, specifically. And then the women will use it to buy drugs and or cigarettes and for other means. But it's not like, I really need to get off the streets, let me put some money in savings. And some of them don't even have savings accounts. So we really share that with them. Hey, this is an opportunity for you. If you're getting funding, how much you're getting, either, you know, let's try to figure out how to get you housing and or let's build a savings account. As you build even $20 a month, it adds up after over a period of time.
Absolutely.
And it gives you that freedom to now get off of the streets and start building a life that you probably never thought you would have. Let us help you with that.
Right.
More with Shanique Carmichael in just a minute. You're listening to You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. There are dozens of great podcasts on the network, so go check them out. I'm sure you'll find something there that you like at queencitypodcastnetwork.com.
You May Have Seen is a member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Now offering video visits so you can take control of your orthopedic care from the comfort of your home. Schedule online at orthocarolina.com. Ortho Carolina, you improved.
I want you to meet David, also known as King David. King David is one of the many people experiencing homelessness here in Charlotte. His story was not at all what I was expecting. But if I'm learning anything on this journey, it's that no one story is what you think it's going to be. I can prepare an interview for days in advance until I go cross-eyed trying to come up with clever questions to ask, but until you sit down with this complete and total stranger and really listen to their story, well, you can pretty much throw all those questions and all that preparation out the window, because you're going to find out so much more than you could have ever prepared for.
Just getting fresh out the shower.
Nice.
Oh, man.
You take advantage of the shower every week?
All the time. Pretty much, yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just in my nature. I don't care what you're going through in life. Just make sure you wash your ass. Like, it's common sense. It's like, what the fuck? Like, so I don't see how people do it. I'm like, hell no, bro.
Right.
Like, it's just common sense. Look, I don't give a damn if you got zero in your bank account or if you have a trillion. Get your ass in the shower. Take care of yourself. That's one thing about me. I've always been self-sufficient, but it's just that my parents are very control freaks.
Okay.
So it's like the minute they feel like, oh, he has his own money, he doesn't have to ask us for shit, they know it's game time over.
Okay.
So for me, man, like, this has been a struggle for me, but it's also been a blessing in disguise, because God is always going to look after David and set me up. And once he sets me up right, I don't have to worry about anything.
I want to make sure that you understand, like, I like sharing people's stories. I feel like everybody has a story to tell.
Oh, yeah, David definitely has a story. As me being, as me being an icon, as me being a legend, and as me being the king of Israel, for me, it has been a very humble experience for me, but it's also has been like a blessing in disguise. Like I said, me experiencing homelessness for the first time in my entire life, because I grew up in a very upper class, middle class family.
Really?
And by us coming from, I've always had it all. My last car was a Maserati Quattroporte Executive GT. So my parents, they stayed out in Weddington. We live right down the street from Stephen Curry, Steve Smith, quite a few other the Hornets right. basketball players and NFL players. We stay out there in Weddington Hills.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of like right down the street from Providence Country Club, Longview Country Club.
Yep.
So growing up in a very, upper class, middle class family, for me, like I said, I've always had, even going back, just coming from an aristocratic and a powerful dynasty, for me, it's kind of like the Lord kind of like humbled me but it was just like, I know the enemies. I have a lot of enemies because I am king. So I do try to conduct myself as in the best leadership position as possible. But you do have other entities out there that definitely will try to rattle you and try to get underneath your skin, because they're like, dang, he's a privileged so-called black kid he's always had, and et cetera. But people don't understand. It's definitely a struggle growing up in my shoes, because I've always kind of been overpressured as me and my sister. By me being the oldest, my mother and my father have always put the expectations on me extremely, extremely high.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, when you don't deliver to their expectations, it can be to a point where, you feel like, you have no purpose, you have no identity. But just by me playing sports all my entire life, by me playing quarterback in middle school, I transitioned from middle school to high school to D2 college as well.
Right.
So for me, man, playing the quarterback position, always being the leader. It's been crazy, but it's kind of crazy when your world is flipped upside down. It's like, damn, you're not all this adversity, all these trials and tribulations.
Right.
It's crazy.
So let me ask you a couple questions. First of all, how old are you?
I'm 34 years old.
And how long have you been homeless here in Charlotte?
I've been homeless for the past 7.5 years due to me and my parents not getting along. They cut me off.
Okay.
Which was cool, but I was already in the process of, definitely having my own. It's just that I ran into some financial problems. Mm-hmm. I definitely put my application in at Carmel Country Club. I was going to work inside seasonal job there because I was used to do outdoor seasonal. I used to be a lifeguard there, okay, outside, and et cetera. So for me, man, it's just a lot of jealousy and dysfunctional in my family. And when you have that, and it's kind of like the Lord's like, all right, it's a funny way when you look at life, because I was like, who the hell? I would have never expected to be one of the greatest kings in world history. Like, you kind of look at yourself and you're like, damn, Lord, why the hell did you choose me? But then again, it's like, why not me? So you really stop trying to be a people's pleaser.
Sure.
And then you just really, you know, focus on God and what God has called you to be. It's just kind of funny, man. Life has a way of working it out. For me, it's still a struggle day to day.
Yeah.
But I do try to take opportunities of the actual resources that are out here.
In talking to David, it doesn't take me long to realize he is much smarter than me. In fact, he's much smarter than me and probably any three people I know combined. So this is where it gets difficult from where I'm sitting. Are there resources available to give David the support that he needs to get him to the place where he truly wants to be? How can we help him? As I listen to David, it's clear to me that he doesn't want to be homeless, but he also doesn't want to be told how to live. I know just about all of us feel the exact same way. So what happens now? Here's more from my conversation with Shanique Carmichael.
So we have a ministry in the Bahamas now where we're able to serve about 250 individuals a month on providing food, toiletries. And then we have a mission trip that we do. And then we have the housing.
Mm-hmm.
We have 12 guys in the home now, and we have a family of eight. Of course, we've serviced maybe 100 plus students for tutoring, free tutoring. And that's an annual, and we do it during the summer.
Right.
So we've been doing that for a couple of years now. We just offer free tutoring for students that are hurting, math, English, science.
Okay.
And so we have college students. We have a Zoom class that we do. Depending, we have a process. If the students are the parents will apply for the free tutoring, and then we set up the students with college students. So we've been able to service with 100 plus individuals doing that over a 5-year period.
So when you were talking about what sounded like the way that you were phrasing it, the sort of the majority of the homeless population in Charlotte,
mm-hmm.
correct me if I'm misinterpreting this, it sounds like there's a greater mindset of being homeless is where I'm going to be. Like,
yeah.
As opposed to, like, how many people in comparison do you think, or a percentage in comparison, are like, I'm homeless and I want to get out of here as soon as possible, as opposed to the ones who are like, this is my existence. And
yeah.
I mean, is that accurate?
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, it's a small number. It's funny that you even ask, and I know I mentioned it, but
right.
The majority of the individuals, mm-hmm. let me just start here.
Sure.
The majority of the individuals on the streets
mm-hmm.
have records. And in North Carolina, you know, even just, let me just focus on Charlotte. I mm-hmm. wouldn't even say North Carolina, mm-hmm. just Charlotte. Once you have a record, and this is proven because we've been working with some of the guys that, the guys that we have in the home now, and even individuals on the streets, it's challenging to get a job with a record, put less apartments.
Right.
They run in credit checks.
Right.
These individuals, they don't manage their checking account. They don't manage their credit. Well, mm-hmm. they're trying to survive. And so as a result of that, it's like, okay, I can't get a job. I cannot get an apartment. I'm on the street. So the little that I do have, I am just going to swindle it. And I'm just going to just live day by day.
Okay.
You know, me even trying to do better is impossible because no one wants to give me that opportunity to do better. And so there's that mindset of no one cares, or not that no one cares, because of the way the system is, I won't be able to get a job so I can get off of the streets. Now, you do have a few that we've actually were able to work with and said, hey, what type of skills do you have?
Mm-hmm.
Do you like to paint?
Mm-hmm.
Can you do some cleaning? You know? And so we had a lady who we helped get a cleaning job.
Yeah.
I mean, started her own cleaning business.
Wow.
She does it today.
Wow.
We had a gentleman who started his own lawn care business,
mm-hmm.
and we helped him with the supplies. But at the end of the day, those are the things that we have to look at and that we now are looking at, because if you have organizations that do have opening, but what's going to prevent these individuals from getting the job is because of their backgrounds and their records, then we have to be creative.
Right.
And so being creative is what are some of the things that you're passionate about?
Mm-hmm.
What skills do you have so we can utilize it in a way that will benefit you to get you off of the streets?
Gotcha.
It's that's just what's happening right now. It's hard.
So what do you need you know, groups like yourself and Leah's Hopes and Dreams, what's the best way to support and help this situation, whether it be support from the city, support mm-hmm. from the community? Do you have a relationship with, you know, with the city officials in Charlotte to where, you know, you have, I don't know, some kind of communication or connection, because you're out there doing it. Right. They're making decisions on how best to try and handle it from right. a city or, you know, county standpoint.
We don't have a direct connection with anyone from the city per se. Mm-hmm. I do know that we assisted when the tent community existed. Mm-hmm. We had a city, I'm going to say liaison or a resource from the city who reached out to myself and several other organizations that were boots on the ground, helping these individuals before the pandemic even started.
Right.
And they pulled us together and said, hey, we really need to get these individuals out of the tent communities into hotels.
Right.
And so we assisted, you know, it was like a fire drill for mm-hmm. 3 days. Sure. We all came together and assisted the city and other organizations to get these individuals out of the tent community into a hotel. So that's the most I've been connected with mm-hmm. them. I am connected with MECMAN. That's an organization that really tries to bring city officials and or city organizations together, whether it's churches, nonprofit organizations, other business organizations. We get together weekly and they talk about opportunities or resources available to help the homeless population.
Mm-hmm.
And so we are able to connect with them, and we've been able to get resources through those organizations to help with some of the things that we're doing. One of the major thing that we've been experiencing that you know of and everybody knows of is, housing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, housing is a major issue here. One, right. folks, some people are not working as a result of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
That's expected because some organizations are not operating the way they used to.
Right.
So they laid off some people. Mm-hmm. Some people got terminated because of mental issues. And I mean, as a result of this pandemic, you're seeing the mental challenges even more,
mm-hmm.
surface even more. The housing piece. So we've been for the past couple of years, in 2014, we visited Austin, Texas, for Community First to look at the study, their model on how to build a tiny homes community mm-hmm. and how to operate it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've been, and we still have that partnership. So we've been, actually, we reached out to them last couple months ago and said, hey, when are you going to have a symposium? We want our team to come back because we really do want to get this tiny homes community off of the ground. The mayor doesn't have an appetite here for tiny homes. And it's the same thing in Austin, and we were warned that people look at a tiny homes community as one that devalues the community,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it's not always that way. The government in Texas or the city in Texas had to buy into the concept,
right.
and now they're on board and they're assisting Community First with building all of these tiny homes because, one, they realized the value in getting these individuals help that are
yes.
on the streets.
Yes.
You are in a community where you're not only hearing the word of God, but they're able to offer them jobs. They're able to provide transportation so they can leave the facility to go to jobs.
Mm-hmm.
They're able to provide mental health counseling. They're able to provide health services for
right.
So they have these wraparound services that mm-hmm. they're offering in this community. So
mm-hmm.
you don't even have to leave the premises to go for different counseling or even mentoring. They have people come in and or they have staff that will do that for them. But at the end of the day, it's a very powerful movement. That's something we wanted to model and bring here.
Right.
But it costs money,
sure.
right? The first thing we have to do is get land. We've been trying to raise funds for the past 2 years
mm-hmm.
to just have enough funds to purchase land because we have the connections and we have the builder.
Mm-hmm.
We've already got the plan in place. It's just now working with getting enough funds to get the tiny homes, finding property, getting funds,
right.
finding property, and getting the city on board with it. Because
right.
we're going to have to be on the outskirts. Cause there's no real estate here in Charlotte.
So, okay.
And you would want it on the outskirts of Charlotte anyway, because one, it sets you aside and sets you apart, but the homeless folks that are there, you really can focus on their needs.
Sure.
What is it that you need? How can we help you? What resources now we can bring into our community to help you move from one level to the next, whether that's education, whether that's mental health, whether that's addiction, well, AA meetings, if you're addicted to something, whatever it is that you need, this community will be able to afford them that opportunity, but you see that you're not in it by yourself. Like, right. People are going to AA meetings with you, and it empowers you. And then you share your story, and then people are changed as a result of your story. It's a powerful thing. I don't think they've seen it. I encourage people to go to Community First and see it. We share videos on how they do it and what they do. But again, it's been a challenge trying to find what we need to get it done.
Then give me, if you can, your perfect scenario, the perfect world or setup, or what it would take for you to accomplish the things that you've set out to do with Leah's Hopes and Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
Would you need a direct line to the city, to the government?
Of course. We would. And we've been doing this for quite some time. So we're not like, this is not new, fresh, you know, like people who don't have experience, right? We have experience and educated people on the board. Funding is always a challenge.
Right.
So having someone, a direct line to the a city official who believes in impacting, making a positive change in the lives of homelessness, and not look at it as oh, this is just another problem that we have to deal with. Yes, it's a problem, but these are people, right, that are impacted.
Right.
Maybe your folks, your family member have never been homeless. Had your family member been homeless before, you would be able to relate, and your outlook on homelessness would be different, right? But someone who, I don't want to just connect with anyone. I want to connect with someone who understands and knows the plight that these individuals are dealing with from a homeless perspective.
Right.
And that individual will be passionate enough to connect with us in any other organization or just bring a coalition of organizations together to literally start looking at land and, hey, if we give you guys this amount of funding, let's put a plan together on what that funding looks like. If that's purchasing land, then once you have the land, we have the plan on the blueprint on what the tiny home needs to look like.
Mm-hmm.
We have the amount of resources we need to get started. And then we just work with different organizations who do have connection, who do have applications right now of homeless individuals or families in need. Work with those organizations, not try to create something new. Work with those organizations and said, okay, we have enough, we have space for this amount of people.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring them in. And as we're bringing them in, now we have people to actually assess them, what type of help they need, and we work with them daily, one by one, to impact one life at a time. I'm not saying we're going to change the world in one day, but we have to start somewhere. And to me, having that coalition of organizations, having that direct line with a city official or someone who has the power to make change or can influence change, having that behind us, and then being able to, there are land out there that people own that they're not using. Getting that partnership and someone just having that's heart to give us some land and or even work with us with the land. Mm-hmm. I don't, you know, people, land is an investment. I mean,
Absolutely.
That's something, you know, that you don't want to just give away.
Right.
But if it's going to impact people's lives and you're not doing anything with it, why not? But those are the basic, I'm hoping I'm answering your questions.
Yes, you are.
But those are the things that I think if we can get partnership or get those things going, I think we'll make a huge impact here. But housing is challenging. And that's our plight right now, trying to find the resources and the right people to help us get there.
Right. I mean, in all the research that I've been doing leading up to, you know, my conversation with you today and preparing to continue to cover this subject in the weeks and months and God knows how long to come. That's
right.
One of the things that I keep seeing is that affordable housing in Charlotte is a huge, huge problem.
What is affordable housing?
I don't know the answer, but I mean...
And now I wasn't asking
yes.
you. Yeah, I was just making
you know,
a... Yeah.
But based on what I've heard that the average rent is in Charlotte now in 2021 and what the minimum wage is.
Right.
And, you know, with all the progress and all the buildings and places that are being built, it's like, yeah, I can certainly see how that does not match up or link at all.
It doesn't.
Now, okay. One, I don't know how you do it. What you just said was incredibly passionate and wonderful, and it's one of the reasons why I love you and support what you're doing so much.
Thank you.
And you know, when we talked about this before when you and I sat down, and I you know, it's very easy for these conversations to get very, you know, depressing or exhausting or sad.
Yeah.
And of course, we, you know, it's not an easy subject to talk about, and we're dealing with something that's very, very difficult.
Right.
So it's it's a tough thing to deal with and to mm-hmm. make it upbeat and uplifting. But you, like, I look at you and I am very much in awe, because I also want to point this out for anybody who's listening. You have a full-time job.
I do.
Yes.
I do.
Leah's Hopes and Dreams is
it's full-time.
It's full-time, but it's,
but
it's
we a, do
it's,
it,
it is a non-profit organization.
Yeah.
Yes. You have a husband, you have children.
Children, yeah.
You got your PhD. You yeah. wrote a book.
Yeah. Two books. Yeah.
And you have as much energy and enthusiasm as you have. Like,
yeah.
I've been out there with you. We've done some work together.
Yeah.
I've served with you a few times, and you're like the cheerleader on the top of the pyramid.
Yeah.
So you put all those things together in the pot, and I don't know how you do it. Like, where does it come from?
Because it's not a job. It's not a job. I love it. The reason why my husband and I work is, one, we have to support our families.
Mm-hmm.
Two, every penny that comes into this organization, I want it to go back into the community, because mm-hmm. that's what we're signed up for, right? We know the community needs it. And the reason why it's not a job to me is because I've experienced homelessness, like I shared earlier.
Right.
So knowing that, it makes this so much easier for me to just do it,
mm-hmm.
because I understand it. And I understand the people that we're serving. Mentally, now this is like a new season or a new area for me. I'm like, I did not know, my husband and I were talking about this, and I'm like, until we really got into providing housing for these individuals, I didn't realize how much of a challenge mental illness was for these people on the streets. I was like, we had a lady today while we were serving,
mm-hmm.
and she took a shower in a shower truck, and folks were lined up to take a shower, first of all, because one of the organizations that they go to take a shower, they opened at 10 o'clock, and then you get in line, and then you in and out, so they, you know, some of them couldn't even, and they take a shower, they shower from 10 to noon,
mm-hmm.
and if you're not within that time frame, you miss out, and so they come and they take advantage of the shower, and this lady was in the shower for an hour.
Oh my gosh.
An hour. I'm like, what is she doing? folks started getting irritated because they're trying to shower, and I still don't know what she's doing. And we kept going to the shower door and knocking on it. Are you okay?
Yeah, right.
You know, what's happening?
Be concerned if she's, yeah.
Yeah. And so I'm like, the mental challenge,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I've seen her month over month over mm-hmm. month. And so I asked her when she came out, what Karen asked her, what can we do to help? Because mm-hmm. Karen is one of the members of the organization. And she was saying to me, she said, you know, I really thought about getting someone or two people off of the streets and putting them in my home. I said, well, we tried that and it didn't work out well for us, because sometimes they're not appreciative. I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they take advantage and they utilize you. And
mm-hmm.
so things don't really go the way we expect them to.
Sure.
And so I said, well, you just have to be careful. At least we sign up to help people. So if you feel like you want to do it, just continue to think about it. And if that's the direction you're headed, then do that. But just be careful on who you put in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And then she looked at this lady and I was like, whew, I don't know. You know, I don't know. But go ahead and take a chance. So she spoke with her today and the lady said, oh, no, I have a group of people working with me and I just want to get out of Charlotte. I want to get out of Charlotte. But
okay.
She doesn't have anyone working with her.
Yeah.
She doesn't want to accept help.
Yeah.
And she's going to tell you what she wants. And if you can't give her what she wants, she's going to cuss you out.
Oh, wow. Wow.
But it's just, you have different people.
Mm-hmm.
Different people dealing with different things. They would respond to you in certain ways.
Right.
But what I know one thing that keeps me going is that I know we're making an impact.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so that's why it's like, it's not a job to me,
because mm-hmm.
I've been there and I just love what I do. I love what I do. They can see it. You just have to be consistent. And that's what's changing lives. They see you. They know you don't want anything for them. You're not preaching to them. You're not telling them you need to go to AA or you need to do that.
Yep.
You have to love them into change. And that's what we do. We love them into change. And they look forward to us coming out. Some of them have changed their lives.
Right.
Some of them, they just don't want to change. That's just reality, right?
Okay.
Whether you're on drugs or not, if you don't want to change, you just don't want to change. But eventually you will, when you get tired of living the way you are. But because of what we do and how we do it, it makes life so much easier for me.
You're amazing. You're mm-hmm. absolutely amazing. Man, it takes me a long time to edit these stories together. It's very time consuming. It's getting close to the end of the day for me, and I still got stuff to finish. So I'm going to let you hang out with King David a little more. I'm going to go take a quick shower. Cool? Cool. If I'm not back in an hour, somebody come get me.
But I said, for me, for David, it's been crazy, though. Me being in and out of the shelters for... the last past 7.5 years. They had us here at North Tryon.
Mm-hmm.
The COVID outbreak went crazy at North Tryon. So they matriculated us there to the hotels, in the motels.
Yep.
I was in the motel. It was awful. I was like, man, it was my first time ever being in a motel.
This, after Tent City got shut down?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
So were you a part of Tent City? That's where you were staying?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. It was horrible. Yeah. It was a nightmare. It was, Tent City was crazy. It was intense. I don't think anybody should ever have to live like that, period.
Right.
I think the city council, all of them, man, they knew what we were going to. They just didn't give a damn until the public start putting pressure on their asses. Sure. And then they started to say, oh, shit, we really need to do something to these. This shit is getting outrageous. Hell, yeah, it's getting outrageous. People, mm-hmm. It got to the point people really started coming out there, and they was like, oh, hell no. It was a lot of people. And they're looking like, damn, y'all, they got y'all out here like this? Oh, hell no. So, man, no one should have to live like that at all.
What was the experience like for you when you first became homeless? How was that transition for you?
By me getting cut off, it was cool, but it's like I would have never known who I was. I would have never known that I was Icon. I would have never known, you know, I came from the 18th dynasty. I would have never known my son was Solomon, the Solomonic dynasty, the Davidic mm-hmm. dynasty. So it's kind of funny how the Lord works out. But for me, man, it was a good thing. I think for my parents, I think it came to a point where we were not seeing eye to eye. They wanted me to do what they wanted me to do, and I didn't want to do. I wanted to choose my own path. I didn't really get along with my father. We're not like the closest. Me and my mom, mm-hmm. we were very, very close. For me, man, it's just been a struggle. Like I said, for me, God has had his hands on me. I want to fulfill God's will. I want to fulfill his purpose, his divine purpose for my life and my calling by me finding out that the throne of David, which is the throne of God, which is in England, mm-hmm. Queen Elizabeth has been sitting on my throne for the last past, 70 years now. So for me, man, finding that all out and finding that I come from a powerful dynasty and a powerful legacy is mm-hmm. something to definitely live up to.
Yeah.
I'm extremely blessed, but it's not a cakewalk. I tell people that, period. But it's just, man, just the trials and tribulations just to get there. It's I've been feeling like I've been on Mount Everest or trying to get up to Mount Everest.
Right.
It's been hell. You got some pretty cool people out here in the homeless community. You do got some very, very bright, brilliant individuals. And then you got some individuals you just need to stay the hell away from. Mm-hmm. It's a balance out here.
Right.
You just have to be wise and surround yourself around like-minded individuals. You are going to have a lot of people that are hating on you because they're going to look at it like, damn, okay, this man has never been homeless. This man has never had to struggle in the day of his life. He comes from privilege. He comes from wealth. He comes from very powerful aristocratic dynasties. Homeless is not cool. I tell anybody that, period, man.
Right.
Once you've experienced this, it's been kind of like a documentary for King David. It really has. It really was kind of embarrassing at first. I definitely know my time is definitely coming.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, man, it has been a circus. I don't wish this on anybody, but it has been crazy. Other than that, yeah, definitely protect yourself while you're out here in the homeless community, et cetera. But for me, like I said, it wasn't embarrassing at first because I've never been homeless before.
Right.
And regardless of my flaws, regardless of if I wasn't good academically. So I never really was the greatest student. I graduated with a 1.7 GPA, but I was always highly intelligent. I always knew what time it was. So
sure.
I try to tell people, I was far from retarded or far from slow or incompetent or incoherent. That's totally opposite. But for me, I've always kind of been, like I said, just the outgoing type of guy. A lot of people have a misconception of homeless people because they think that all homeless people are either just beggars,
mm-hmm.
They're losers, or they're bums, or they've just given up. No, it's not that. It can happen to you. You know, you could lose your job. You could, you know, you can get kicked out of your parents' house. Anything could happen. It could be a tornado. There could be some type of natural disaster. I mean, this shit could happen to anybody, but it should definitely be a learning experience. I don't wish it on anybody. I mean, for me, I hated it. Like, I was mm-hmm. just like, man, I know where I came from. And especially when I realized who I was and, you know, I was like, damn, man, I'm the king. Not only am I the king of Israel, I'm the king of Great Britain, technically, by genealogy. I was like, damn. I was like, I got it made. I should not be struggling. I was like, where the fuck is Secret Service? Where's the British Secret Service right now? I mean, they got their fucking royal heir here.
Right.
To me, it's about fulfilling. Why are you here? Mm-hmm. Why do you exist? What did God create you for? And I think at that defining moment, when you really realize why the hell were you created, why are you here on this earth, that is game changing and game breaking for itself. Like, it's no greater love and greater passion than fulfill your purpose and your God-given destiny on this earth. My special talent for me, man, I'm very, very creative. Yeah. I mean, I do love to write. It just depends on what's on my mind. For mm-hmm. me, I think a lot of people, they're going to find out, like, damn, you know, hey, King is smart. Like, you're not going to be able to please everybody
sure.
in this world. You're going to have a lot of haters. Mm-hmm. I know I do have a lot of haters, but I have a lot of people that love me unconditionally as well. So for me, it's like, I don't like to be played with.
Right.
I don't like to be taken for granted. I don't like to be like treated like a child, because I'm not. I'm a yeah. grown ass man. Mm-hmm. I'm 34 years old. I can wipe my ass. I can read and write and comprehend.
Well, man, look, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down and talk with me. This has been a fantastic experience
Thank
for
you,
me.
Man. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
Absolutely.
Definitely appreciate you, man.
Got it.
Thank
yeah.
you. Thank
Hope
you.
To talk to you again.
You too. Have a great one.
I did this TV commercial campaign for several years. That was me and a couple of linemen from the NFL. And it was a fun campaign. It really was. I was the bumbling burglar in all the commercials, and the NFL players, who had a combined weight of close to 600 pounds, were the security system. And every commercial, I would break into the house, and together, they would literally pick me up like a bag of potato chips and throw me out of the house. Take after take after take. Now, don't get me wrong, these football players were incredible, and they were fully aware that I was half their size, if that, and they did their best to be as safe with me as possible. But when you're that big and that strong and you're used to clashing with similar-sized forces, it's easy to not fully realize your own strength. So every take, I would have to brace myself and be ready for the next hit, the next tackle, being lifted clear off my feet and thrown several feet out the door, hoping I would land without hurting myself. I'm not sure I've ever been more alert and ready with anticipation ever in my life, and just thinking, okay, hopefully this is the last take. Hopefully the director gets the shot that he wants, because I don't know how much longer I can do this. Talking to David reminds me of that. David's story is very complicated and complex. He's dealing with circumstances that go far beyond my area of understanding. I can't imagine what he's dealing with. I can hear his exhaustion of waiting and dealing with each disappointment he faces. But I also hear the optimism in his voice. I hear the energy. I hear the hope. He hasn't given up. So that means I can't give up hope either. Here's Shanique to take us home.
Let me ask you this question and see what your take is on it. Why does homelessness generate so much debate and confusion?
Because, well, debate and confusion. Well, there are many different ways I can take this.
Okay.
So from a debate perspective, some people who've never experienced homelessness, let me stay focused now, because mm-hmm. I'm looking at, in my head is just, I'm going a million miles
sure.
per hour. Some people who've never experienced homelessness, they debate the fact that these individuals want to be homeless. Mm-hmm. You know, they start arguing, they can do better. You know, why are they on the streets? They're healthy. They can find a job. They could do this and they can do that. And or they be like, oh, the city can help, and they have resources. So why are they still on the streets? Mm-hmm. They just want to be on the streets. That's not the case, right? Most of the individuals on the streets, they don't want to be on the street,
right.
You know? Honest, and I'm being honest, they don't want to be on the streets, because if they had a job, or they made stupid decisions, if I'm being transparent.
Yeah.
They just, some of them make bad choices.
Mm-hmm.
Bad choices lead to them being on the streets, but you shouldn't condemn them because they made bad choices. People change. When you're a youth, you made a lot of stupid decisions, and as you grow up, you learn, right? These are grown people who are making decisions while they're grown, sometimes selfishly. The repercussion is you're on the streets.
Mm-hmm.
As a result of that, you know, that doesn't mean that you need to be there. You deserve to be there. Everyone deserves a second chance. And some people who have never experienced homelessness, don't know about it, who wants to go out and say, I'm doing a good deed by giving some food here, or I'm serving for an hour mm-hmm. once a year. They think, okay, I've done what I can and I'm moving
right.
on.
Right.
And then they literally, you have some ignorant folks who just think that homelessness shouldn't exist because people can find ways
right.
of finding jobs and or living with families, XYZ, right? And then
right.
you have the opposite. You mentioned a debate, and then
confusion.
The confusion because of lack of education.
Mm-hmm.
I think lack
right.
of education. People
right.
are, and if you think about, if you don't serve, or if you don't have a relationship, or even ever experience it, you wouldn't know, like, as I mentioned earlier, the plight these individuals are dealing with.
Right.
You have people sleeping in cars there are hundreds of people sleeping in cars. You have people with homes that are struggling that don't want to ask for help but end up on the streets because they're afraid to say that I am about to be homeless mm-hmm. because of the way people look at them
right.
or of the way they feel like, and they care about that,
yeah.
or they feel like they're going to be condemned because something is happening that they have no control over.
Mm-hmm.
Could be illness. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Could be a death in the family that
mm-hmm.
caused you depending on your husband and he passed away. Now you have nothing.
Right.
Could be any. You have kids that their father left. You as a woman, you're in a home and that happens a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a home and you have all your kids and now the dad, the husband left. And so you're in this situation where you never thought you would be. So you and your kids ended up homelessness. It's just lack of education or confusion. People
right.
just don't know it, but people judge because they don't know.
Sure.
They just, so there could be a combination of things that cause they just don't know.
Right.
They just don't know.
Yeah, I
hope I answered that correctly.
No,
but
no, this is your take on it. Your perspective,
because yeah.
you're in it every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting.
There's a compilation of things.
When you said that there are people who think that homelessness should not exist, I will say from my side of it, to me, homelessness should not exist. Because I feel that we do have the resources.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. But it's so hard to find.
Well, sure. To get people, exactly, like you were saying, to get people on board.
And then when you do find them, it's challenging to go through the process. When you find resources, you have to go through so many steps.
Sure.
To get the necessary need, the necessary things that you need. And then you have to wait for months.
Okay.
That's huge.
Yes.
And these kids, these people are not going to wait for months. And if, you know, it gets worse. Even if you're sitting down waiting to get fine housing. When I tell you, this young lady was on, she's still on the streets now, but I watched her month over month, and I sent her to, I'm not going to call a specific organization.
Sure.
You know, I sent her to a specific organization and said, hey, they have like housing.
Mm-hmm.
They might be able to help. She said, yeah, I went there. I'm on this waiting list for months. Then I said, well, try to get into a shelter because
mm-hmm.
you have the Center of Hope for Women
okay.
and Children. But I said, try to get in there. She said, well, she went there, but it was like, they prefer to stay on the streets than to be in a shelter
mm-hmm.
because of the abuse, the stealing, and what they go through. In the shelters are worse. And even men say they don't want to go in the shelter because of the, you know, the way shelter living is. I'm not knocking it. It's a someplace
no, of course.
For them to sleep. But at the end of the day, if you don't want to sleep in a shelter, you prefer to sleep on the floor, on the ground, on the outside. What in the world is happening,
yeah.
right? I don't look down on any of them. I don't judge any of them
mm-hmm.
because it could have been me. You know, you don't, unless you start talking to someone and they won't really open up to you unless they trust you,
mm-hmm.
you know? And or if they see that you really, your intentions is good for them, but you have to, you just have to extend grace. You have to extend grace daily. And we do that.
I had this quote, or well, kind of a quote from Bryan Stevenson. I'm probably going to get it not direct because I heard it from somebody else, but it really hit me when I first heard it. And he said, "There's not a problem in the world that can't be solved by getting approximate to someone who doesn't look like you."
Yes. Wow, that's powerful. Say it again.
Yeah, right.
There's not a problem in the world.
There's not a problem in the world that can't be solved by getting approximate to someone who doesn't look like you.
Yeah. We all have the power to change things depending on what it is that you want to change. You know, you might not have the influence, but you might find someone who can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just have to care enough. You really, and the people who do have the influences and the funding, they just have to be aware. Awareness is key. And then if they're passionate about it, if this is something that they care about, they'll find a way to change, make change. You just have to find the right people. This is not, homelessness in Charlotte is not going to change overnight, and one person can't change it. You know, we go out there and they love, the lady said, we look for that shower truck. Like one of the ladies came to me and she was like, I knew that you guys were coming. I knew I could depend on this. And thank you for it. So I was in the hospital for 8 days with my son. I literally went out there today when my husband called. He said, well, I forgot the coffee containers because
mm-hmm.
he worked overnight.
Mm-hmm.
And so he didn't have, normally if he works overnight, I'll get the coffee. I'll make sure that we have the volunteers ready with food. And so today it was sort of chaotic because me being in the hospital, I couldn't do the coffee stuff and I didn't do a lot of the coordinating, but we still have our volunteers on the board. Some of them showed up, some of them are out of town. So you just have to go with the flow. Mm-hmm. And so I went to Dunkin' Donuts and I said, well, Dunkin' Donuts is 3 minutes up the street. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go serve this morning before and then I'll go back to the hospital. It's because, one, they expect, they look for us. Mm-hmm. And the lady said, I'm so high. I know you would come out here. I knew you when I saw that truck, you would come. And thank you for bringing the coffee. Even though it was in a different form, mm-hmm. it was coffee. That's all they care about. Right. They want something hot because they knew they came out of the shelter or they were on the streets. One of the guys said he was walking back and forth, pacing on the street from 2 o'clock this morning. All he wanted was a shower and some coffee. And that's it. You know, some of them don't want much.
Right.
They just want to figure out how do I... Another guy said, you know, this is only temporary. Sitting on a wall with me while someone else... Because he was waiting to take a shower. He said, this is only temporary. I know I will get through this somehow. He said, I'll make it. I said, you bet that right you will. You sure will. You'll get through this. Everything happens in time. Everything. You just have to believe that you're going to get out of it. And you start working towards it, God will open that door. He will get through that. But he cannot give up because it's not easy on the streets. It's not.
I can't imagine, and I think about it quite a bit, and that's why I'm having these conversations.
It's not.
You are incredible. You are absolutely incredible. You're going to make me cry in a second. Shanique, tell people listening where they can find Leah's Hopes and Dreams, how they can support or connect with you if they need to.
So you can go to leahshopesanddreams.org, mm-hmm. leahshopesanddreams.org, and you can get signed up to volunteer with us. We serve every Wednesday, every Saturday, so we would love to have volunteers. If you have groups or organizations that want to come out and serve, normally during the fall, we have a lot of requests. Mm-hmm. So just send us an email at leahshopesanddreams@gmail.com or go on the website and submit a group form. That'll be great because mm-hmm. once you start serving, you'll get to see the need and then you determine how you can best partner with us to serve those in need, right? I try not to say, do this and do that. I want you to come out and you see the need and then you help assist because most of the time we get donations, mm-hmm. but I think we get more partnership when people come out and serve mm-hmm. to see how their funding or how their supplies are helping the community.
Sure.
So they can reach us there. They can go on Facebook at Leah's Hopes and Dreams, or you can just go to my personal Facebook page, Shanique Carmichael. Same thing for Instagram, Leah's Hopes and Dreams, or because I post photos and videos of what we're doing mm-hmm. so you can see, the impacts that we're making. But if you want to get involved, you can definitely just reach out to us on either of those platforms, Facebook, Instagram, go on our website or send us an email and we'll definitely respond right away.
Well, look, that I am a huge fan of you and your organization.
Yes, thank you.
And I will try to continue to support in every way that I can.
Thank you.
I can't thank you enough for sitting down and talking with me
about this. Oh, this was amazing. I'm passionate about this.
I hear the constant hope and passion from Shanique. To be in her presence and witness and feel her never-ending supply of love for every person she interacts with is truly inspiring. I hope that she and her husband Mike and the entire group from Leah's Hopes and Dreams can continue achieving their dreams by helping one person at a time. I hope King David is able to find his castle so that he can finally live happily ever after. This has been You May Have Seen, proud member of the Queen City Podcast Network, powered by Ortho Carolina. Thank you so much for listening. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And if you'd like to leave a comment or review, that's always nice. You can also email us at youmayhaveseen@gmail.com if you have a comment or a question, and we'll give you a shout-out in the next episode.